Not just anybody. You know, I need someone. Younger than today. You never need anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I'm not so selfish, you're but I'll find the change of mind. I'm opening up the door. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio Studio B. It's 31st day of January 2025 with my co-host, Brian Davidson. We're going to be joined in 30 minutes with Larry Rivera, who's a leading expert on the assassination of JFK. He's been all over the previous releases, and we're going to talk with Larry about what we might expect to find in these new files that are going to be released, and it can be surprising. For example, in the last batch, although they were not released electronically, so you could do a digital search, Larry went through hand by hand reports about what happened in Mexico City and Oswald's alleged visit there. And it turns out they were explosive. They just blew the whole story apart. Remember, Lee is supposed to be this pro-communist, Castro sympathizer who killed JFK with three shots from the sixth floor of the book depository, all of which is nonsense. I mean, Lee was actually standing in the doorway. He didn't fire any shots, wasn't on the sixth floor, bah, 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 when the JFK motorcade passed by. But guess what? They use this trip to Mexico City as verification that he was a communist, that he wanted to get a visa to travel to Cuba and then make his escape to the Soviet Union. Well, what Larry discovered, and because he's born in Puerto Rico, bilingual, there were a lot of Spanish aspects to this, which were effortless for him. He discovered the whole thing was an elaborate ruse. That they had persons who were clearly not Lee Oswald, both audio and video, that there were impersonators there. In fact, J. Edgar, and he may in retrospect have realized this was a mistake, put out a memorandum to all the FBI officers that someone was impersonating Lee Oswald in Mexico City. Now, if that's all you knew about the assassination, you know the whole thing was a setup. But get this, even worse, Lee's passport is stamped, not valid for travel to Cuba. Not valid for travel to Cuba. So what they did, they released a totally obscured version where you couldn't even see the stamp. Larry now has the much better, I mean, blown apart. And in addition, he uncovered that among the CIA assets in Mexico City were three presidents of Mexico. Three presidents of Mexico, CIA assets. Brian, I'm willing to bet none of that surprises you. I know JFK is not a primary interest of yours, but Larry's just done this sensational work, so he's going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about what we might expect from the files that are now going to be released. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know as much as I probably ought to about JFK. I've probably got 50 or 60 books back here on my bookshelf because my father-in-law was a JFK freak. I mean, he really did study it. He had handwritten notes all over the office after he died, and I've been through some of them, but I haven't been able to put together the pieces. Frankly, ever since I've been in the game since 2016, I've been watching false flags develop all over the place. I've seen all sorts of fakeness that comes driven by the government in order to upgrade the amount of money that they can spend on different government security programs. And I imagine that JFK, I'm seeing a couple of very large angles one related to the Jews and AIPAC and Zionism, and then the other one related to Cuba. I rely on guys like you to really put the pieces together for it. So this will be much as much of an education for me as it is for anybody else. I've been sort of brushing up on this latest discussion of the release of the JFK files, but I still kind of scratch my head and say, I don't think I'm going to get my hopes up quite yet. I doubt there'll be a smoking
Yeah,
gun
well,
in it.
turns out Pompeo had somehow induced Trump not to release all the records before, which he had intended to do, and now he's brooking no opposition. He's even taken away Pompeo's security clearance, as well as that of the 51 intel officers who falsely alleged that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. Brian, I'm sure glad to see him cleaning up today. He sent out an order for the top officials at the FBI to clean out their desks by the end of work today. I'm impressed with a lot of his moves. Others related to foreign policy, not so much. But in terms of domestic, and sending, 1,500 troops initially, 10,000 more to our southern border. We're going to have a war with the cartels. I mean, a real shooting war. The cartels are very well equipped, heavily loaded, not just automatic weapons. I'll bet they have Stinger missiles. They probably even have tanks. They're not going to go down without a fight. And I think it's going to be on the order of a military conflict. Meanwhile, I want,
Well,
Brian, any thoughts?
I think the big question is, are we the puppets or are we the puppeteers? And right now, I tend to believe that while it looks like Trump is playing a strong game, he's just released a new executive order to combat anti-Semitism,
Yes.
basically unleashing all the forces of the government to make sure that people can't talk about Zionism, the Jews, as a problem in culture. So we don't know how far that's going to go. I suspect something smells very, very bad about that, and that they'll use it for a cover for more censorship. So we see that Trump has allied himself with a lot of it feels like America's being cleaned up right now. But the real question is, who's behind the shadows pulling all the strings? And I think that's an interesting question because in the last months of Joe Biden being in office, who was signing his signature? Who's the one that decided that he shouldn't run again? Who's the people that decided that Kamala Harris ought to run? There's a lot of different questions. And I think right now, what we might be seeing is sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. As long as Trump appears to be cleaning up America, he'll get a lot of political support and a lot of support from the people. But the real question is, will the top tier of kings and queens that are really pulling the lines feel the heat, or will it just be sort of low-level bureaucrats who are considered pawns that are being cut out and eliminated to make it look as if America is going to clean up its act and take back its sovereignty? I think there are bigger questions and bigger conspiracies to be considered. JFK, while I think it's a good step in the right direction, assuming we actually get anything that's viable from these files, remember that Pompeo prefaced his conversation about the JFK files last time around with, well, we've got bigger fish to fry. We've got bigger things to worry about, with UFO files and bigger problems related to, aliens and other deceptions. So whether Trump gets rid of that and sort of puts a pause on the degradation, I don't know. But one thing I do know, the deep state does seem to be running scared right now, but I really wonder if those are just the pawns rather than the real kings and rooks and knights that are pulling the strings above.
Well, you certainly raise an important issue here about censorship and deporting foreign students who are anti-genocide. I mean, of all the issues, student can protest, genocide has to stand at the very top. I admire every student who has stood up in protest in favor of the Palestinians against the Israelis, their onslaught, the genocide, ethnically cleaning up Gaza. And not only has Trump now signed an executive order to allow the deportation of foreign students who participate in these protests as a form of anti-Semitism, whereby he's buying into the International Holocaust Memorial definition that anti-Semitism includes any criticism of the actions of the government of Israel, which of course is far removed from being critical of a person because of their religion or their ethnic heritage. I mean, it's insulting, and that Trump should invoke it is to me appalling. So this is, in my opinion, his area of greatest weakness is excessive enthusiasm for Israel. He's talked about having the Palestinian population moved to various locales. One proposal came out from the transition committee was moving the Palestinians to Indonesia. Now, this was supposed to be temporary while they rebuild Gaza, but don't believe it. Obviously, it would be permanent. He's talking about relocating them to Jordan or to Lebanon. This is all very consistent with Mike Huckabee, whom he's appointed to be his ambassador to Israel. Declaration that a Palestinian state is just fine as long as it's outside the borders of Israel. I mean, Brian, this is historically, morally, legally offensive, especially when we know from the International Court of Justice and the suit against Israel for genocide brought by South Africa was represented by a barrister from the UK who inventoried the entire history of the creation of the State of Israel and demonstrated there's no legitimate legal foundation for the State of Israel. That land is all Palestinian land. And it's incredible to me that Trump, who may or may not have converted to Judaism, as I have heard, should be so colossally unfair, biased, wrong, I mean, in every possible sense, in his attitude toward the Palestinians. This has been, to me, his greatest weakness from the beginning, though, to me, I argued with Harris and Walz, we had a guaranteed calamity, more of the same, including open borders. That was intolerable. While Trump is a mixed bag, there are risks there. He is obviously the preferable choice. I continue to make that argument, but I sure agree that his enthusiasm for Israel, genocide, ethnic cleansing is, to me, simply appalling.
Well, if we try to put Trump in the savior box, I don't think we're going to get very far long term. He's not the savior. He might be restoring a sense of patriotism and a sense of national pride at this particular point in time, but he's still just a politician and he's still just a man with just a plan. And as a politician, you're going to expect that he's going to make certain deals with the devil along the way, and that he's probably gone to some of the more powerful, rich and powerful Jews, as well as Zionists, as well as even Jesuits, and made arrangements to allow their continued support, to allow access to many of their media platforms, to allow, him not to be killed and removed and continued to be attacked as long as he protected certain interested parties. So when we see people going down under these circumstances, we just say, okay, well, they're not aligned with the right people that did get themselves aligned with Trump. Yes, I've seen the videos of Donald Trump at the Wailing Wall. Yes, I've seen him wearing the hat and even Melania being involved in some of the prayers with the hat on. Yes, I've seen these initiation ceremonies similar to Freemasonry type initiation ceremonies. Yes, I've seen the accusations that he was, part of the club back in the day, but none of that stuff has been used against him in this particular round of battles. The Republicans never came up with a serious contender that seemed to have alignments with people like he did. He did take, I believe it was $100 million from Miriam Adelson, Sheldon Adelson's cohort. And I suspect that that came with certain strings that certain parties would be protected throughout the process. So I think as an American right now, I'm trying to balance out, well, is he getting the bad guys? Is he putting us back into a position where we can take our government back? Is he going to sort of restore order and restore freedom of speech? Well, he's already said he's not going to. He just put out an executive order yesterday that said he was going to do an anti-Semitism, or he's directing government agencies to do an anti-Semitism censorship campaign. So don't expect that you're all of a sudden going to get this wonderful freedom that's going to come along, that's going to, make us confident that American society is not a puppet anymore. I just don't believe that's going to happen. Will things improve? Will the DEI initiative go down? Yes, probably. Will the trans chatter go down? Yes, probably. But again, those are sacrificial pawns that are part of a larger system. I think the important thing to remember is there is no sort of savior that's going to take us back to what we were founded on, that is a political entity and a political party. So is it better than the alternative? Yes. Is it a theocracy? No. Do we want a theocracy? No. But what is it leading toward? And right now, I've been spending a lot more time trying to figure out what the ancient prophets had to say. What is God thinking related to this? And what are the signs of the times in terms of where this is all headed? Because I can feel something very, very evil developing. And I think that a lot of people will get caught up thinking that the good is the bad and the bad is the good. And there'll be a lot of this dark light sort of commentary that begins to develop. But in the end, there's only one way that's right. And I simply don't believe that that's something that's going to be accomplished on a national basis.
Now, as an extension of Trump's policy, it's often said personnel is policy. His three most controversial nominees, Kash Patel for FEI, RFK Jr. for Health and Human Services, and Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, are undergoing their confirmation hearings as we speak. There's been some fascinating exchanges. They've tried to get Tulsi to claim that Edward Snowden was a traitor, where Snowden revealed that the government was spying on the American people. He's not a traitor, he's a whistleblower. In my opinion, Edward Snowden is a great American. They were also assailing her for having traveled to Syria to meet with Bashar al-Assad, where she's explained that the American government was supporting al-Qaeda in Syria. I mean, that now there's a truth that the Senate, it would appear, doesn't want to hear. And of course, they have claimed she was some kind of Russian asset in this visit with Assad and such. But Zero Hedge has put on a very thorough refutation. Tulsi, I think they fear because she's honest, she's intelligent, and she's not going to be easily played. Now, with RFK Jr., Big Pharma is spending a huge amount to try to defeat him. And he's calling out some of the members of the Senate that might initially seem surprising. In particular, he had an exchange with Bernie Sanders, who, for last 30 years, I would say, has got remarkably favorable press. But it turns out Bernie Sanders is a recipient of Big Pharma donations. And they had an exchange where RFK Jr. was yielding no ground to Bernie Sanders. And I think the more the American people become aware of what's going on here and what's at stake, the stronger they're going to feel positively about RFK Jr. and the less favorable about partisan hacks like Bernie Sanders. I mean, for the most part, I thought Bernie was a good guy, but I'm seeing a side of him I never saw before. Now, Kash Patel seemed to have, the whole FBI seemed to be scared shitless that Cash Patel is going to come in and clean house. Now, I say Trump is already initiating that process. And we've had, directors, assistant directors are resigned from the FBI because they can see what is coming. Your thoughts about any of the above, Ryan?
Well, the confirmation hearings are obviously a joke. We're simply getting the echo chamber of Congress where we get the Democrats repeating the same tired talking points and lies that the mainstream media has been feeding to the sheeple on MSNBC for years as if it's established fact because MSNBC said it. So we get that one side, and then we get the other side, which is the Republicans doing everything they possibly can to protect themselves from the potential fallout here, Epstein files being part of the possible damage, as well as the contributions, as well as the stock trading that has driven the personal wealth of most of these senators, with the exception of Massey and maybe a few others. But that echo chamber has just become so tiresome. And I think one of Trump's best moves so far is that not only has he selected people that appear to be strong in these particular areas, almost everywhere I look, I find incredibly strong communicators, not just the kind of guys that are deep in thought and introspective and taking a close look at policy using, World Health Organization sort of doublespeak language, but they're mostly a group of down-to-earth communicators that have been through the ringer of the FBI investigations and the attacks and everything that you can possibly come up with, and have felt the brunt of this. But there are also people that seem to be very, very well developed in terms of their ability to communicate something to the American people that's going to help us continue to believe that we're moving forward in the right way. And for that, I'm going to give him a big round of applause because, unlike what happened during the Biden administration, and even to a large extent, the Obama administration, with all the gaslighting that was taking place there, Trump is being very straightforward. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of duplicity and deception that's happening in the background and the wings. And you can see that a lot of these quote unquote powerful people, who again, I would probably say are pawns in the game, seem to be running scared. Now, I believe at this point in time that there is a large society of very powerful global internationalist bankers who are pulling strings, who have always pulled the strings, but they're always out of the spotlight in terms of our ability to identify them, see what they're saying, hear what they're. It's not like these people have Twitter accounts that we can follow. They stay out of the spotlight as much as possible and then expect that their personal assets that they've bought and paid for are going to do the talking for them in terms of political doublespeak. So, who are the real enemies? Are they the ones that we can identify? Are they the ones that we can point our fingers at, like Adam Schiff and Maxine Waters, Sheila Jackson Lee, and Nancy Pelosi and all the other sort of blowhard, diehard Democrats? No, they're the people that are pulling the strings behind the schemes. Are they tied to Big Pharma? Yes, but doesn't even really matter anymore. I mean, when doing a big evaluation of the world, don't you find at the base of the problem the same list of sort of we don't know who they are, but we know they're there, which is BlackRock, Vanguard, Fidelity, all the big investments that seem to own every major urban area roadside retail machine that's out there, including Home Depots and Lowe's and Walmarts and Targets. I mean, that's the machine that's eating up the resources of the American people. That's the machine that's leaving people homeless and in debt. That's the machine that also we rely on to keep the economy rolling around, but it's on a daily basis continuing to make it harder and harder to enter the game of, can I compete in online retailing? Can I compete by renting space and selling a physical product? Can I compete here or there? It's creating the division of the haves and the have-nots, which has been spiraling out of control very hard for the last 4 years, but I think it might be delayed for a while, with a new economy that seems to, or at least that's being promised to be developed. But will it really make a difference? I think those that are in debt up to their eyeballs will crash, regardless of whether Donald Trump is in place. The good news is a lot of the Hispanics are running scared, and there's a lot of jobs out there. But do Americans really want to do the work? I don't know the answer to that. My instincts tell me that they don't. But at least we're not being overrun with crime and all the effects of a lawless population from south of the border moving into America.
Excellent. All of that excellent. Before Larry joins us, let me mention the air crash in Washington, D.C., where a helicopter appears to have hit an American airliner as it was coming in for landing. The plane, the airliner, appears to have been perfectly proper in its approach. The chopper, we get multiple reports, some it was on a training mission, others it had a designation that it had some VIP aboard. Donald Trump has just announced it was at the wrong altitude for the very idea, of course, of having military training going on near a very busy airport like that airport is appalling. Well, look, we got a break here. Larry will be joining us, but I would like your thoughts after the break, Brian, about what's going on here with the DC crash.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in the dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, 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 Radio. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomsif.com, the People Station. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm very pleased that we're joined by Lara Rivera, who, in my opinion, has been doing the most cutting-edge research of the last decade in the recent, on the subject of the assassination of JFK, including his first book with Moonrock, The JFK Horseman, where he recovered interviews with the four motorcycle escort officers and their supervisor, Stavis Ellis, confirming that a limo stop had taken place that was fairly elaborate, where Officer Hargis to the left, where he parked his bike, ran between the two vehicles up toward the grassy knoll. Douglas Jackson on the right motored up the grassy knoll until his bike fell over and he proceeded on foot. Five agents dismounted and surrounded the Kennedy limousine, where one took a piece of skull from a little boy and threw it in the back seat, which I believe was, in fact, what would come to be known as a Harper fragment. And astonishingly enough, an agent by the name of Glenn Bennett actually climbed into the limousine. Now, this is over and beyond Clint Hill rushing up to the back, where he may have hung on to the back all the way to Parkland while this other agent was inside. Larry, I so congratulate you on that wonderful work, and I gave a sketch of what you discovered in the earlier releases about the Mexico City charade and how the passport is even stamped not valid for travel to Cuba, which government agencies have concealed from the American public, and blows the whole story of Lee having been a communist sympathizer seeking to get a visa to make an escape to the Soviet Union by way of Cuba, demolished to smithereens. Just disgusting. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thanks, Jim. I can't think of a more important document that is still yet to be released than Lee Oswald's passport, D092526, which was renewed, which amazing expediency from one day to another, you know, June 24th to 25, 1963, and which fortunately the Dallas Police Department had the foresight to take photographs, you know, of both passports, you know, just to clarify perhaps some myth or some misunderstanding. The passports were not found at Ruth Payne's garage or her house. It was found at his rooming house at Beckley, North Beckley, which you and Gary and I visited. In fact, Gary and I went and recreated that supposed walk where supposedly William Whaley, the taxi cab driver, drops him off almost a mile down Beckley, so then he has to double back and spend more money on cab fare, you know, which is totally ridiculous. And we went and we timed it, and it took us about 8 minutes and, you know, some seconds, you know, to make that walk at a brisk walk, you know, I'll tell you. And that's where the passports were found. And I posted this on my blog, and I provide these, you know, to any researcher who wants to keep a copy of this. And I can't find a more significant document which shoots down the entire Mexico City scenario, Jim.
I know, it's just astonishing. Now, I've made you host, Larry. So if you want to go to that blog and show us the passport that the Dallas police photographed, that would be terrific.
Sure.
And of course, you want to hear more about what you found in the earlier release and what you expect we may find if it's a legit operation in the newly about to be released records.
Well, I've been working with the new releases, plural, since they first came out in July of 2017, you know, up until a couple of years ago when they, you know, they, under a lot of pressure, made some more releases. But we know that there's still some very significant documents, obviously not no smoking gun in there, but, you know, complementary pieces, you know, that fill out that puzzle here that that we've been trying to put together. And that passport is a huge, huge part of this whole thing, you know. Let me just, because I've got blog going on here, Mexico City.
Yeah, just love this work and turning out that three presidents of Mexico were CIA assets. Larry, I mean, that's just
I know.
proxy.
Yeah, how can you even trust anything out? I mean, that's one of the subplots here, Jim. Obviously, but how can you trust anything that came out of Mexico City, Let me see. Here we go. Okay, you see that? Okay. So, this goes back a couple of years ago when I was surfing, this North Texas State University website that is a repository, happened to be a repository for the Dallas Police Department documents. They were uploaded to that site, apparently indiscriminately. Nobody, really took the time to look at what was being uploaded, and we are so fortunate, for that, because this is, and it's, as you can see, it's a sepia tone, which at the time was very popular, black and white. And the definition is incredible, if you ask me, for 1963.
Yeah, I agree.
And when you process it, and you can see that somebody to the left here held it down flat.
With our fingers, yeah.
Yeah, so another person could, obviously this could not be done by the same person, so the other person. So and these were taken by the DPD, and when you process it, it's June 25th, and here it is, plain.
There it is. A person who travels to or in the listed countries or areas may be liable for prosecution under Section 1185, Title 8 U.S. Code, and Section 1544, Title 18 U.S. Code, not valid for travel to Cuba.
Besides the other countries above, which list China, Korea, Vietnam, Albania, I mean, and Cuba, they figured, hey, since these are times, when there are travel bans to Cuba, well, let's, stamp this with a special stamp, that's big enough for people to understand what we're talking about here, So,
Wonderful, wonderful. This passport is not valid for travel to or in
you just
communist
read that.
portions of China, Korea, Vietnam, or in Albania and Cuba. I mean, wow. But by the way, my co-host Larry, Brian Davidson, is a private investigator. I'd love to get his thoughts about this fine. Brian.
Sure, go ahead.
I would rather listen. I don't, yeah, they look like great photos. There's a, if people were to take the time to get into some of these archives, you'd be shocked at how much research you can uncover just by doing it yourself. JFK isn't necessarily my thing. I've worked on a lot of different other false flags, but I can tell you that, for instance, on the Sandy Hook case, I found everything I needed and more inside their files. They're just hoping that people out there won't look, or at least the mainstream media that is constantly covering for them won't look. But there is a tremendous amount of evidence out there for people who really know how to do the research.
And what Brian's talking about is the Connecticut State Police files on Sandy Hook, where he found not only evidence that there had been no mass murder, but also evidence it wasn't even an operating school. Go ahead, Larry. I know this is where the passports were found.
This is the old Beckley address where he stayed under the name of O.H. Lee. You can don't believe all that. And here is a very interesting picture of the possessions that were found there at the North Beckley address. And I mean, very meager possessions, Jim, and Brian here,
At the lower left.
Yeah, you got a couple of flip-flops, old worn out shoes, and this is what was found there. And besides this, the two passports. Now, the next document, which is extremely important because it gives you the chain of evidence. Brian, as an investigator, probably would appreciate this one. which was signed. This, I mean, a very detailed inventory of what was found at North Beckley. Okay. And within the inventory, and we're going to mention the guy from the FBI who signed for this, who we have been we have
Yeah.
been doing a lot of work on Warren DeBru, but that's we can fill probably a couple more hours on that guy. But here are the two passports, and here's a property clerk's invoice or receipt. It was prepared by the DPD, but it was signed by the FBI.
It
Okay.
says passport number.
Yeah, and you've got here it is, passport
Yeah.
number D092526.
Name of Lee Harvey Oswald.
That's right. And here is Warren DeBru's signature right here. Okay. And this is the original document. This is not a black and white. This is the original. This is what's so amazing, in
Love
color.
it, love it, love
So, and then the next page lists the second passport here at the top. Here it is, 17332. Okay. So the chain of custody or evidence at this moment in time resides and stops, ends with the FBI, right? I
Yes.
mean, right. I mean, in any normal legal procedure or whatever, criminal procedure, this is it. Now, obviously, this passport was renewed. The old passport was renewed in the summer of 1963 while Lee was in New Orleans, and we all know all the things that were going on there, and the Judy Baker story, and everything that she had to say about her relationship with Lee. Obviously the part about Mexico City, I have my reservations, okay, on that portion. But she does have a lot of circumstantial evidence that she, for example, you cannot refute the Riley check stubs, for the time and her social security record,
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Those are
For those who may be unaware, Judith Vera Baker has affirmed having had a relationship with Lee the summer before the assassination in New Orleans. She was working at the O'Reilly Coffee Company, but in addition, she
It
and
was a
Lee and David
cover.
Gray were working with Dr. Mary Sherman on the development of a rapid-acting cancer vaccine they wanted to use against Castro.
Under the
But America, in
supervision
fact,
of the.
actually have used against Jack Ruby. Go ahead, Larry.
And under the supervision of the great
Yeah.
Ochsner, the Ochsner Clinic, Dr. Ochsner, who was the one who was coordinating all of that. And but anyway, this is what was going on in New Orleans. And then after that, well, this is the application for renewal. Okay. And very interesting, this photo here of him turns out to be a very, very good high definition. And when I got my hands on the color version of this, let me see if it's here somewhere. No, it's not here. It's in the book. So guess what? All of a sudden, with this and the other passport photo of Lee, we can do overlays, photographic, forensic photogrammetry and stuff like that with this and the other Lee of from 1958 when he went to the Soviet Union. And I don't know if I have it here, but this is all. Here's the D092526 again. Well, because I just switched to the other article, I have two of them going.
Now, what is the date of this evidence collection? When did this take place?
The evidence was received by the FBI, as stated up here in the receipt, on Tuesday the 26th, right here. Okay.
But wasn't it on the
November the 20th.
22nd that J. Edgar Hoover told Robert Kennedy that they had JFK's killer?
Well,
And that
all of that.
he had gone to Cuba on several occasions. It was the 22nd when Hoover told that to Robert Kennedy.
It's
So,
a little early, but Larry.
yeah, I don't know about. I know that Hoover, right away, the weekend of the assassination, immediately received when he received copies of the photos of the Mexico City, Mexico mystery man, that same night, he said, "That's not Lee Oswald," you know, and he wanted to throw the CIA under the bus over that, and that's why he made them public, because he always had, you know, this battle with the CIA over, you know, where he thought that the FBI should be also be responsible for international things, you know, like the CIA is involved, you know, in every embassy around the world. But anyway,
Well, let me just interject. What happened on the 22nd was Edgar called Bobby, whom he despised,
yeah, right.
to tell him his brother's dead. I mean, it
That's
was that
all, yeah.
bald. There was nothing about Cuba, Brian,
Yeah,
on the
and he hung up, and that's it. Screw
22nd.
you. Anyway, but
Oh, I'm looking at a document dated November 22nd, 1963 at 4:01 p.m. from J. Edgar Hoover saying, "I called the attorney general at his house and told him I thought we had the man who killed the president."
oh,
And
this is like.
in the letter, it says, and he went to Cuba on several occasions.
Okay, good.
Well, that's a smokescreen that he was throwing out there. It's very obvious. So
He had no foreknowledge.
here
Send us
are
that,
the.
Brian.
Send us that. Just put it in an email copy. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I'll send
Excellent.
it to you.
So
Very.
here are the overlays, okay, which tell me, okay, this is the old passport. This is a picture of the old passport on the left. The one on the right is the photograph that was attached to the renewal form. All right. So we've got these two going here. And when we do, because, you know, a lot of this thing about Second Oswald's and everything, yes, I agree 100%, especially with the Mexico City thing. And I will mention the Lopez report, which was suppressed until 1992, where Ed Lopez and Dan Hardway determined that Lee Oswald was most probably impersonated in Mexico City, and I couldn't agree more. But here we're talking about just 1959 and 1963, difference of 4 years, and this is the same man. Okay, there's no doubt about that. Everything
Is
lines up.
that the superimposition there,
Yes,
Larry?
yeah, 50% exactly. And these are the photogrammetrics, as you can see. You know, the lines, you know, line up perfectly. Now, here, okay, the thing about the passport is that it was used in the visa application for Cuba, okay, from September the 27th to October the 2nd, when that imposter flashed it. You know, now we know that this was Lee's passport, but very easily a passport like this could have been forged by the CIA. They were known to forge documents, you know,
Sure.
especially in Mexico City. And now, if it was Lee's true passport, we don't know. But it was used, the number was used in the visa application. And I'll show you right here. Okay. Here, the square D092526. Okay, this is Consulado de Cuba, Mexico. Okay, solicitud de visa, et cetera, okay. And this Sylvia Duran, who, and I to Jim the other day, I don't know if you were able to see those videos of her talking and for the 50th anniversary. And she is speaking almost flawless, perfect English, you know. For somebody who is just, you know, a nobody working in the consulate, doing secretarial work and stuff like that, you know, and knowing, which I know, and it's in my new book, it's almost 1,000 pages. I dedicate a couple of chapters. There was a mole inside the Mexican consulate and embassy called, his name was Luis Alberu. He was in the cultural program, and he was known as Little Mill Nine. Okay, and this guy was the top mole inside the Cuban consulate, and he had an agent assigned to him, okay, and he would tell the CIA, he would have meetings with this guy, Lawrence Barker, and he would have clandestine meetings with him all over town in cars and bars, you know, and cabarets, whatever. To report on everything that was going on in the embassy. There was another woman by the name of Consuelo Esperon, and she was known as Little Mill Seven. Okay, so when Scott not only has the presidents in his pocket, okay, he also has a few of the actual employees in there in the consulate. Now, I wouldn't doubt that Sylvia Duran was pitched, to work for the CIA. And the more I look at this, Jim, the more, I'm thinking, especially now, if you try to get a hold of her, I had somebody try to find her in Mexico, and he called me up, and he didn't put this in writing, but he told me, gave me a verbal report. He said, "Man, it seems to me that that woman is protected by the state, So, and if you have time to run those short clips that I sent you the other day, your audience here can we can show the audience how
Larry,
well it works."
you're, you want to, you can play them. You're welcome to play them.
The what?
You're welcome to play them.
If I can find it.
Well, if you sent them to me an email, just go over email to me of which you've sent only a few.
I emailed them the same day, the other day. But anyway, it's still up in the air. I think, and the more, and I've been researching Mexico City for more than a decade, and probably even more. And I'm not ready to say it yet, but I think there's a good possibility. There's a possibility that she was, she was not who they, painted her to be. And the even the consul Eusebio Ascue, okay, the CIA was hot on his tail, to turn him over, and to be a mole, for the CIA, because he had a sister that lived in the States, in the US, and she had a career in the States. So, in
This
fact,
may be who it was. That was Sylvia Duran, the sister.
no, of Asquith, the consul. He had a sister in the US, so he
Okay.
had ties to the US, and they tried to pitch him to also, work for the CIA, turn him into a mole. But Mexico City right now, and we spoke about this the other day, a lot of authors have a lot invested in
Yeah.
Mexico City, and for example, here, this is a tourist card, okay, to go to Mexico for 15 days. Now, this would have been totally unnecessary if you have a passport, So this is, and the signatures are not the same,
The stamps are not the same, yeah.
Yeah, and here you see the Acta de Nacimiento, the only document that they use for identification. It was a birth certificate, birth certificate, Acta de Nacimiento Americano, American U.S. birth certificate. That's the one that they presented for this tourist card, So, he's got the passport in hand, wants to go to Mexico City, and instead of presenting the passport for this tourist visa, he presents his birth certificate. That doesn't make any sense at all. So,
Crazy. Brian, I know you've been digging more. Give us any thoughts you have. Brian.
Well, I guess my biggest thought is we knew that the story was planted very early. This is something I've personally observed in a number of different false flags. Every time I see within 2 hours of the shooting that the police have announced that the shooter has acted alone, which is what happened in Uvalde and Sutherland Springs and Santa Fe and a number of the other ones that I've researched, they always come out with the cover story first. And they'll say, well, it appears that the shooter has acted alone and that thus delaying, but how can you, from an investigative standpoint, how can you possibly come to a conclusion where you would say that if it was a real investigation? Because it would take time. This happened with the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, where on the very morning of the shooting, the police and allowed the media, they allowed Telemundo into his home. The shooter, I can't remember his name on Orlando at this point in time, but they allowed him in. And sure enough, there's the passport nice and laid out along next to the Quran, next to, all the religious documents that create the story. And the police didn't even bother shutting it down as a crime scene, even though he supposedly had a van full of bombs that were going to blow up all the gays. Nobody asked the question. Nobody shut all that down, and they let the people, they let the media go in with the canned story super early to sort of head off any other real investigation that takes place. So it appears that this is part of the same setup right here with that Cuba memo that I just sent to you from Hoover to Robert Kennedy.
Excellent.
So
Let
okay.
Larry, if you don't have them at hand, I mean, during the break, we're coming up on a break. I'll track them down on the email you sent me. But did you find them?
No, I haven't, because I have this here up on the screen. I was
Okay.
you asked me to keep this sort of like about the new documents that
Right. What we can expect.
supposedly are going to be released, and that I have a wish list. I have obviously it's four
Okay, great.
things, and
Terrific.
but yeah, I let me I'm where okay, hold on, let me go into my I'm gonna stop the share for a second.
Sure.
Let's see if I can find Sylvia.
Now, this stuff that you found in the Dallas files, is that also on the archive.gov or the Warren
No,
Commission report or
no,
no?
you're not going to find it there. No,
Wow.
no, no. Crazy, but it's okay. Yeah.
We got
Yeah, I
the
guess
break. We'll be right back with Brian Davidson and Larry Rivera. You don't want to miss any of this.
let me see if it's still, because sometimes I remove the attachments, you know, to save space. Let me see. Sylvia, okay. Okay, they're still here. Uh-oh.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
One second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourself because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back.
I thought that in a moment, or
All
you
right.
can capture us and fall us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with
Okay.
We tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over.
And he said, but that's impossible. I have to go to
For
Cuba.
governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. The hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
I got Duran queued up here.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, welcome back, where I'm joined by co-host Brian Davidson, who's a private investigator from Texas who's done sensational work on Sandy Hook, Uvalde, Orlando, Nashville, and Larry Rivera has been doing cutting-edge research on JFK, including reviewing the documents from the earlier release of 2017, where he discovered proof that the alleged visit by Lee Oswald to Mexico City was a charade and a sham, and that the Dallas Police Department had actually taken photographs of Lee's passport showing that it was invalid for travel to Cuba, meaning the whole story of Lee Oswald being a pro-communist Castro sympathizer wanting to make his escape by getting a visa to travel to Cuba and then back to the Soviet Union was rubbish, complete rubbish. Larry is now finishing his second book, 1,000 pages. Larry, I'll probably have to be in two volumes, my friend.
Yeah.
Showed around 1,000-page book. But yeah. Listen, you got so much more to share with us. Larry, yours.
Yeah. You asked me to talk about the documents, the new documents, and what was in there and what was the possibility moving the case in any way. And I have my list, okay, from all the research that I have done. And one of them has to do with David Morales. Very interesting. We're going to cover that in a second. But let's I have this Sylvia Duran clip queued up. And please listen to the way that she speaks and she expresses herself. And by the way, when Tony Summers interviewed her in 1978, somehow he found out that she was coming to Washington for the HSCA. Her testimony was secret, was classified, was an executive session, okay? Nobody knew what was going to happen. It was never published. It was suppressed, you know? By the way, her original statement from Mexico City was never found. And the CIA had to admit, look, you know, this got lost in the shuffle. But anyway, Duran goes to Washington and Tony Summers interviews her and he shows her a clip of Lee Oswald in New Orleans, you know, when he was being interviewed by WDSU. Was that the station in New Orleans? And the way that he was speaking, it's that one where he's talking about the different philosophies, you know, that he adheres to and everything. And she tells Tony Summers, that's not the guy that I met in Mexico City. This guy speaks eloquently. This guy speaks intelligently. This guy, there's no way. All right. So then you put that together with her secret testimony. Now it's sort of like, I'm going, wow, this woman. And then when I see this, I'm going to go ahead and grab this and
Go
show
ahead.
you the video. Okay.
And he said, but that's impossible. I have to go to Cuba right now because I only have a permission of 3 or 4 days in Mexico City, so I have to go. I thought that in a moment or he will be crying because his eyes, he was very excited, he was very red, and his eyes is like with the, well, with bright shining, like he was in tears. So, and he didn't want to understand. And so I called the consul Asquith.
Esque.
Duran says Oswald lost his temper with Consul Asquith.
Then Asquith says, listen, get out. Get out. And he went to the door that it was locked. He opened and he said, get out. And if I see you again, if you come again, I'm going to kick you out.
As he left the embassy, Oswald should have been observed by CIA operatives. Houses across the street, the CIA was maintaining non-stop photo surveillance on the Russians and Cubans. Yet the CIA claimed it failed to take one single photograph of Oswald. After the Kennedy assassination, the CIA first said that this man, photographed leaving the Russian embassy,
Mexico
was
mystery
Oswald.
man.
This has fueled speculation that Oswald
He's been
never appeared.
identified to me as Walter Tabinski, Larry.
He claimed
Walter
his master display
Tabinski.
an imposter, like the man in the CIA photograph.
The suspicion was that Oswald didn't make it at all, that there was an imposter.
And he said, but that's impossible. I have to go to.
All right. So that's what really gets me here. She doesn't sound like somebody who's been living in Mexico all of her life. She obviously has some kind of preparation, education in English. It's what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think she was her testimony was being suppressed because it contradicted the official narrative, of course, including the original CIA. We can't find it anywhere. Obviously, they canned it, or they made it inaccessible to the public. I think the fact that Tony Summers interviewed her was just sensational. What a fluke! And that she looks at the photographs of Lee Oswald and says, that's not the guy.
In the originally she both her and Ask would say, hey, this guy was blonde, short, skinny, older, he got very red in the face, so many descriptions of a person that is not Lee Oswald, obviously. So that's one of my number that's number one. If we're gonna I we should have done a reverse count here, but that's
No
number
problem.
one.
No problem. No problem. Brian, I'm sure you got something to comment before we go to
Sure.
Larry's of what would be great if.
I'm just gonna throw this in.
Yeah.
In when the Sandy Hook files, when I accessed those files, they had 8,800 files. There was no rhyme or reason to how they were inserted. As a matter of fact, it appeared that the files were jumbled on purpose so that nobody could come through and put it together. Now, taking a look at the JFK assassination records at archives.gov, I'm seeing 20, 30 different releases of documents since 2017, including up to 80, 90,000 documents. So there's, have you ever found that anybody has put all this stuff together into a single central sort of timeline repository, or is that just too much work for any human to actually accomplish?
I'll answer that. When the files were originally released in 2017, and this is something that Jim and I spoke about extensively, they were released in PDF form that were not searchable. Okay. Now, you couldn't just go there and enter in a search dialog, anything and get results. You had to go file by file by file. Okay, you remember that, Jim? Remember?
Of course.
I've had to do the same thing.
So, and in fact, even today, if you go and download one of those files and try to do a PDF search, you'll find that they are not indexed for PDF searches. Fortunately, the people at Mary Farrell, as they began receiving these documents, they indexed them, and now they are searchable, but only if you download them from Mary Farrell. For that, you have to pay a subscription, which I do a year per year. I believe it's $79, but you get everything there. If you really want to do JFK research, that's the place to go. Now, here's my second one, and it has to do with David Morales. Okay.
Just to mention for the background, when E. Howard Hutt thought he was dying, he actually survived. He gave to his son, St. John, a list of the chain of command. He said it went from LBJ to Cord Meyer to David Attlee Phillips to William Harvey to David Sanchez Morales to carry out the assassination in Dallas. And we know independently George Herbert Walker Bush and Edward Lansdale were involved, where Lansdale appears to have positioned the shooters and determined the sequence of shots. Larry.
And my blog post on Morales is actually dated, quite dated, maybe 2, 3 years ago. Newer documents have come out. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go ahead and put up that one chapter, because this guy is important. And what can I say? There's only 61 pages to his 201, and I mean, that's ridiculous. A lot of
Sure.
documents are scattered. You will not find a. There are so many individuals there, in the documents, where they have organized 201 files with a cover page, and then it tells you how many pages, and it goes chronologically from recent to back. And there is a syntax, a method, to the. Now, when
His
you.
reel would have been on the order of 5,000 pages, not 52. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right. Now, when you get to David Sanchez Morales, okay, here's that, but that's not where I wanted to go.
But show us a picture just while you got it there. Just
No,
scroll down and if you
actually,
get
I have the chapter up here. Okay. Here we go. Okay, can you see that? 12. Okay, because I get a file here. This is the actual chapter 12. It's in the book. It's page 788. Give you an idea. Yeah, and this is the actual finished chapter. I have sent this out for peer review to some selected authors, and but this one just really blew me away here, because this document is a short autobiography that he wrote, okay, himself. And it goes from 1946, 53, 53 to 55. He was involved in the Arbenz overthrow, along with Attlee Phillips and Hunt and Anne Goodpasture. But this one down here, okay. I'll show it to you. In Vietnam, okay. Now, the one point here, it says here that he served as a counterinsurgency advisor on Latin American matters to the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Washington, D.C.
Yes. I know it's that
Now,
burger. Just a bit. There it is at the top.
yeah, you can see it, right? Okay. Now, this is David Morales. As far as I'm concerned, he's supposed to be a grunt, and this is who he's hobnobbing with at the time.
That's not. Yes.
David
Yes.
Sanchez Morales. Okay, so anyway, we go through the entire, but the one thing that I want to get. This is his personnel file, what's left of it. It gets classified in the middle of his career. Here is a short, here's a biographic profile. We did a show on this a couple of years ago, you, Gary, and I, and on these documents when they first came out, where it shows that, in 1958 to 1960, he's in Havana, Cuba. All right. And that's where he's doing his most dirty work. Okay. And it has to do with underwater demolition, the training of frogmen to do, and here's one review from his fitness report. Speaking operationally, Mr. Morales is a one-man gang. Okay. So I'm just setting this up. Now his specialty was were two clandestine disciplines that he used in 10 and paramilitary PM operations and foreign intelligence, where he recruited, organized, and implemented this type of discrete warfare, okay, in Cuba. Okay, now this is what I want to get to, the La Cubre incident. Now this La Cubre, and I'm sure you remember we did this already, but I feel that this is has to be number two on my list, because these documents regarding the La Cubre are still classified by the U.S. government. Okay. And,
Because it was the US government up.
of course, but the more, see, now at that time, we didn't know about David Sanchez Morales and his specialties. Now that we do, you put two and two together, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to infer that this was his, of his doing, of his
Yes.
organizing.
Yes.
Now when this happened, I don't know, everybody knows about Che Guevara, that famous picture. Well, that picture was taken while they were doing the processions to the cemetery, for the people that had died in the La Cubre incident, the what they call the guerrillero heroico, heroic warrior. And the processions where you got Fidel, you got Che Guevara, you've got Bill Moore, William Morgan, Gutierrez Menoyo, and joining in that, because that was a big event, and it showed that the U.S. was ready to do anything in Cuba, to, and this is, I have to say, state-sponsored terrorism, Jim. I mean,
Yes.
that's what this was,
Yes. That
and
seems to be
so,
an area of specialization for the United States.
yeah. So then, like I said, with Sanchez Morales stationed in Cuba, and he's it says he's underwater demolitions. That's a specialty, I mean, it had to have been him, or organized by him and his, cohorts or whatever, And now then, in the middle of it, right after that, in the middle of his, right after that, his entire CIA file gets classified. Okay. You
He's
know how,
yeah.
the entire classification of his file in the middle of his career is not normal. Okay.
Yeah.
And this happens right after the La Cubre incident. And then they sent him out. Then they returned him back to JM Wave in Miami, where he continued, But this was of such importance that even the Daily New York Daily News reported on this, and it explicitly blamed the CIA and its frogmen for the incident. I mean, the details are an uncanny
That's why
blueprint.
they had to bury his files, because he was the guy.
Yeah. So now this is number two on my list, if you ask me. It's got to be. And then, on and on. But I'm showing you some very privileged stuff here,
The
just to
book
whet.
looks sensational, Larry. We want to be sure to look at your list, your wish list of what you'd like to see come out in the new releases.
Yeah, I've my next one, and we also okay, has to do with Warren DeBru. Okay. Our good friend Warren DeBru. You got that?
Yeah, but
Okay.
that's getting
20,
curious.
yeah,
That's getting
29.
beyond what we can cover here and now, I think. But I want to get you back, Larry. Give us your
Oh,
thoughts about what might be in the
Oh, well,
release?
this is the last one. This is the last one, and it'll
Okay.
be brief.
Go ahead.
Juan de Bru files this report 10/25. Okay, it's supposed to be a 40-page document. It's supposed to be a report on Lee Oswald. Okay, now they say, oh, they were not the FBI at first. Oh, we didn't even know about this guy, you know? Well, damn, it says here in this, at least in these first two cover pages, that they have been following him and tracking him and tracing him for months, you know? Fair play for Cuba committee. Okay, we'll maintain contact with Cuban sources, and these Cuban sources are in this report, and these are his informants, and these are the guys. Okay, L.W. Robertson, this guy was the postal inspector. All right. this guy, 886S, we still haven't been able to identify. But down here, Orlando Piedra, Roberto Fernandez de Castro, Eduardo Guevara, and Jesse Corr. Okay, so this report has, it says here that this report has, see, incident report, page 12, you know? So this report is supposed to encompass 40 pages. Here it is. But we only have 2 pages, okay? And the most important pages are the ones of the informants talking about Lee Oswald, because they're the ones that are giving him the information to Juan de Bru, about where Lee Oswald is, what he's doing, blah, 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 you know. And you can't find it. I mean, so
Yes.
I'm missing 38 pages of this,
Well,
and
it'd be nice if those 38 pages were in the newly released document.
exactly, but so that's and that would tell you exactly the type of surveillance that they had Lee Oswald under. It's not what originally came out. He was a lone nut. We knew nothing about him. All of these informants are giving him information on Lee Oswald. They are following him. They know where he's at. They know what he's doing. And then, all of a sudden, pop, Mexico City, And obviously, to finish, Silvio Odio, the famous Odio incident, where on September 27th, the Friday of 1963, he shows up at her door, asking, to help, and funds in the anti-Castro movement and everything, And when she sees him, and they, says, wait a minute, so that. September 27, okay, they had a problem with that, because on September 27, he's supposed to be in Mexico City. All right. So Silvio Ho Odio had to be discredited, and which they did, and they called her a crazy woman, loca, divorced, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But those are my top three, and I'm sure there are others, but
You mean that you'd like to see more come out in the new files?
Well, the Morales file should be at least 1,000 pages, and we only got 61,
Right. And of course, all the stuff about the passport was in the Dallas PD, but hasn't been released by the government.
Right. And
And then.
by the by, I know, and what I was telling you the other day, how everybody, talks bad about the CIA, and they're not releasing files. The ones that were really, as far as I'm concerned, that have really been stonewalling the public about files has been the FBI. I did a
Yeah.
FOIA request. I did a FOIA request for the passports,
Yeah.
because, I found that receipt by de Bru. He's the one that receives it. Okay. Well, it says here that you guys have the passport. Okay. The passports. No, not the passports, the passport, the D092526. And the FBI answered and said, oh, according in accordance to the ARRB, the JFK Records Act, we duly submitted this to NARA, to the National Archives, and you need to take this up with them. All right, fine. Well, now at least they have, set the stage for me to say, okay, well, it's not with the FBI. Now I got to go after NARA, because the FBI says that they gave you the passport. Now, what would be in that passport? We only saw a couple of pages, but a passport is a passport book, and every country that you visit, they
Right.
stamp the visa in and out of the country. So
Right.
that's why it's so important.
Brian, let me bring it back in. Give us thoughts of yours.
So all this brings up an important thought in my mind. If we're researching the people, that were involved in the JFK assassination. Obviously, that research is going to extend itself into a number of different governmental operations, which, and how far does the executive order theoretically go in terms of opening up personnel files that are arguably unrelated to the JFK assassination, but would shed light on who these people really were? When I think most of the American public says, oh, release the JFK files. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean all the personnel files related to all the people that were involved, or does it just mean that which the FBI collected during its investigation of this particular group? Or, how far does it extend itself?
One of the files that they seem to be most protective about is for George Joannidis, who is a CIA psyops guy for both JFK and RFK.
And that's peripheral to me. That's peripheral. That's not really that important. Go ahead.
But Joannidis is not that important.
I don't think so. I don't think that's really that important. I mean, we have the reports. We have his fitness reports before and after, So we know what he was doing with the DRE. We know the propaganda thing, and we know that he was in New Orleans, many times, but we need to get a little higher, like the passport, like the second passport. That's important.
Yeah, I agree
So
with all Brian.
I guess the question is, what have we historically seen in terms of how the powers that are simply assembling these files are working? Are they literally in there pulling every document related to every person, or are they just simply trying to determine what can we throw them that's
And
garbage?
who
And has
determines
that
what's
been
important? Yeah.
Stand by. We're going to the break, and I'll give out the number for calling in with any question you may have for Brian Davidson, Larry Rivera, or me. We'll be right back.
I'm pretty convinced that the FBI and the CIA are still going to stonewall. They're gonna, they're gonna delay. This Joannidis thing is not really that important. In order of importance, I would give it maybe a 10 on my list, But and I know that people have a lot invested in
Larry,
Mexico
I
City
think they can hear
books,
you.
authors, books,
Larry,
and if the Mexico City charade falls apart, they're not going to sell any books.
we're still
Well, I
live
would
on
like to
the
take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support, which has
I'll come
made
back.
Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in the dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, 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 radio. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the call-in number for the show is 608-957-8727. 608-957-8727. Larry, I think I would disagree about Joanita's for the following reason. His file is going to show how it's indispensable to shift attention to a single individual, Lee Oswald, you know, is responsible for the event to distract attention from all the array of powerful forces that wanted Jack out, primarily for reasons of policy, preferring those of Lyndon, or in the case of the Anti-Castro-Cuban retaliation for what they believe was betrayal at the Bay of Pigs, and similarly for RFK to put all the focus on Sirhan. After all, he's a Palestinian who's better as an enemy when Israel had a role in taking him out, just as blaming 19 Islamic terrorists on 9/11 and Osama bin Laden, who was himself actually an officer in the CIA. I mean, that's how they play the game. So I think the Joe Anita stuff could be very helpful to the public to get a handle on how they play the charade of blaming falsely a party who was not responsible, which, of course, is the core of a false flag.
Learn. Well, are you referring to the Joannides' possible participation in the like Sean O'Sullivan presents in his video presentation, JFK Must Die, that he might have been at the ambassador with Morales? Is that what you're referring to?
I was thinking more that he was in the planning stage in the background, but did we have? I think we did have Joannides with. There were two others that were identified at the ambassador, three CIA agents. Yes, that would include that, Larry.
Yeah, Morales was one of them.
Yeah, Morales was one of them.
And he said David Sanchez Morales was one of them. But, you know, the DRE was, it started in Cuba, okay, and then it transferred over to Miami after Castro. But they, when they were being organized in Miami, it was Joannides, you know, who took them under his wing, and they were referred to as AMSPEL, okay? And he went back and forth from Miami to New Orleans. Now, was he involved in setting Lee Oswald up? Possibly, in telling Carlos Bringuier to go and confront him, you know, over on Canal Street, you know, it's possible. All right, that he's manipulating Carlos Bringuier, you know, very possible, you know, and
he's dealing with the public relations aspect of it. You know, how can we present this to the public through the media to create the impression we want? Brian, your thoughts?
Oh, I don't You guys are talking about names I know nothing about. I haven't
Yeah,
gotten that deep in the files. So.
John Ades
But
was a psyops guy for the CIA for both Bobby and Jack. Yeah. Larry, I just love everything you're sharing with us. I mean, the new book looks like it's going to be sensational. But I mean, 1,000 pages, 1,000 pages.
I'll send you the TOC. It's 16 chapters. We got a chance. I'll just put it up here real quick.
Sure.
Why
Now
not?
go right ahead of me.
I mean, it's been 7. You know, when I write a book, it takes a long time, but you know.
But there's a lot there when you're done. Wow. And
Because
this
I
will be
feel Larry just.
a Moonrock book again, right?
We'll see. We'll have to see that. Okay, here it is. It's broken down in 4 parts. Okay. First, the number one issue, the number one thing that got JFK assassinated was this, Cuba, right? You would agree that,
And it was among
yeah, but you've got Cuban affairs.
I have Lyndon plotting the assassination already in Los Angeles in 1960, far
Sure,
before the
sure.
Cuban affair. But getting the anti-Castro Cubans riled up and thinking Jack had betrayed him was obviously an important part, where they had
Right.
a shooter, Nestor Donia Escadro in the Dal Tex, firing 3 shots with a Mannlicher Carcano to create the acoustical impression of only 3 shots having been fired, where all the other weapons were silenced.
Didn't they
Couldn't
build a
see.
statue? Didn't they build a statue for him
Yeah,
and
they got a
went to
statue to him in
Little
Little Havana. That's right.
Havana? He got the job done. Anyway,
Yes.
Cuban affairs, then Puerto Rico, which I, surprisingly enough, a former governor was a CIA agent, Luis A. Ferré, Skewer One, and he was the center of a lot of exile, Cuban exile activity in Puerto Rico. And of course, Puerto Rico's role, where even the other governor, Luis Muñoz Marín, who had been compromised, for his heroin habit, opium habit and drug habit, and was the first native governor of Puerto Rico. And then Mexico City, of course, with the voter surveillance, the audio, the wiretap surveillance, going on. And I just mentioned Little Mill 9. Okay, how and so he deserves a chapter of his own, because his 201 file has very specific notes there. Do not release until this agent is dead. That's how important this guy was. Sylvia Duran, this chapter covers almost 170 pages. The
Wow.
Regis Blahut scandal, hardly nobody ever talks about this, but this is the guy, the CIA guy, that went and was brought in when the HSCA was doing their work in 78 and 79, and they had a special safe where they kept the autopsy photographs, and you had to sign for the photographs. If they had special combinations and everything, it was a special room even. And all of a sudden, his fingerprints are all over the photographs, and how that played out, and then of course Sanchez Morales, Sherry Bustos. If you ever gotten into the Mexico City thing, the Bustos cables of October the 8th, and October the 10th, the twin cables, where she signed off on these, saying that this American guy, first they said Lee Henry Oswald, and had been to the embassy trying to get a visa, and what who she was, because her 201 was released, and her story is incredible. Alan Dulles, of course, he had the cryptonym of Asham, and then the John McCone 1963 calendar, which we covered, we did a show on, and where he was celebrating on the 22nd with drinks and dinner, the assassination of John Kennedy, and the Skorzeny thing that came out recently, where there's a book that came out, the Skorzeny papers by Gainas, and quite revelatory. Also, another book that came out, coup d'état in Dallas, regarding a diary by this guy called Lafitte that also brings Skorzeny into this, not Skorzeny himself, but his agents who were on loan to the CIA to go and do assassinations all over the world. If you ever heard of QJ Wynn, QJ Wynn wasn't just one person. QJ Wynn was an organization, and Skorzeny, the ex-Nazi, he was running these things out of Madrid, and there were some documents that show that Skorzeny's people might have been there. You ever heard of Suetra? Suetra was that French guy that was deported from the U.S. and out of Dallas. He was there on the 22nd, as a possible one of the possible shooters. We know that it wasn't just shooter. We know with one shooter, we know that it was several teams of shooters in a coordinated, radio coordinated operation, paramilitary operation, actually, which is what it was. So that's what
Yes. Yes,
just
yes, yes.
a little
Ryan, do you have any
preview.
questions you'd like to put to Larry? I mean, it's such a wonderful opportunity having him here.
Well, I mean, I hate to ask such sophomore questions to such a pro, but in the end, what agency would this have been born in, and across what agencies? How long did it take to plan, and how did they get them in place and get away with it? I mean, I hate to ask such a big, stupid question, but
You believe
hey.
it or not, Jim and I talked about this many times. You know how many entities wanted JFK dead? There are at least 10, right, Jim?
I think I ate eight in particular.
Well, military, industrial,
CIA
Congress.
Joint Chiefs, Mafia, anti-Castro Cubans, Israel, Texas oilmen, Lyndon himself,
Hoover,
and the
Hoover.
Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, each of whom, by my account, put up their own shooter.
Hoover.
Hoover and
So,
LBJ are facilitating.
were there any credible whistleblowers or resistance? I mean, you're talking about murdering a president here. Did anybody come out of the woodwork, or if they showed any resistance, were they just killed?
Lyndon was going to become president. He promised nobody was going to ever suffer or be punished for participating in the assassination, Brian.
No, but I
And
understand Brian's
we have
question. And
one Rostow.
prior to the event, was there any sort of resistance, any whistleblowers or
What you're
anybody
saying
that
is
was.
somebody, someone would have talked, is what you're saying, right?
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, it is an interesting question.
People did talk. A lot of people talked,
Yeah.
including the heads of the
They
mafia.
got talked and then they got taken out.
Right. But Roscoe White, who is a CIA shooter, was a Dallas cop, joined the force only recently, may have taken out 50 witnesses. He may have
What
killed
a
50
story.
witnesses.
Oh, by the way, I'll do a shameless plug here for Gary Shaw and Ricky White just wrote this book on Admitted Assassin. It's called Admitted
Can't
Assassin.
quite see it yet, Larry. I don't know.
Because I've
Pull it
got
back or something. Yeah, there was. There you go. Admitted assassin. Roscoe White. Yeah. Well, he's a real deal, unlike James Files, whom I've become convinced cannot wasn't there because he doesn't talk about the limo stop or the shot to the back of the head where Jack slumped down and Jack eased him back, which set up the shot he claims to have taken, which actually appears to have been fired by Frank Sturgis.
Well, who shot from where? I mean, who was there shooting? I know what the trajectories are impossible to ignore, like the storm drain and the cubby hole over under the, those are hidden places.
Let me tell Brian. Larry has done a 3D, he's something called Blender. He's done a 3D reconstruction of Dealey Plaza so he can recreate specific scenarios and see if they're even consistent with the layout of Dealey Plaza and a host of other issues. Larry, it's just such sensational stuff. You've truly mastered Blender. Just as Brian has mastered the techniques of internet research. I mean, you two guys are just both fabulous.
And you know where all that started. Remember back in 2014 in November, we were in Dallas, you, Gary, and I staying at the Lawrence Hotel, and I popped up my opened my computer. I said, Jim, I think this is the future of JFK investigation, is Blender. And I didn't even know how to use the program. And
Oh,
Jim looked at me and said, maybe later on, as you get better in, doing it, but I have
no. Oh,
to.
you've turned it into a science, Larry.
Well,
Eureka science
thanks.
is so
It
fabulous.
takes a while to learn, yeah, that's and I sent you some really I got some new images. If nobody's called you, let me put some of these up.
Brian. It was Larry who did the superposition of Michael Vabner on the photographs of Noah Posner that show that Noah was Michael as a child. Larry.
Okay, here, let me show you. Okay, we all know from the Nukem tapes, these are renderings that come out of Blender, by the way.
Yeah.
And we know from the Nukem tapes that Hargis got off his motor and ran in between the two limos, right?
Right.
So this is our representation. Here he's starting to get out. This is actually from Zapruder's point of view. And
Yes.
look at the red courthouse with this is newly modeled, the red courthouse building is new.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And the sky, which is
Love it.
part of the scene and everything here. And here he is, and he's getting off. Okay, can you see this? All right.
Yep,
And
Brucey.
we have the limo stop. You have the lights are on there.
Sure.
And he crosses in front of the in between the two limos, just like the motorcycle cops, said. And
Right.
here he is. Okay, so that's just a little taste of what's to come. And I sent you the one with the motorcycles going around and everything.
Wonderful,
And
wonderful.
another thing that I was speaking to a colleague the other day. Now with the sound of the Harleys in the scene, it changes everything in my mind, because if you're talking about four Harleys surrounding JFK, the issue of noise,
Yeah.
and anybody could tell that shots were being fired and everything, or that
It would have
even
been very
the
difficult with the Harley noise to hear the shots.
or anything else going on, okay? And that's and that pre and that one clip that I sent you, that's only two Harleys. Now imagine all four of them, on each side. So it gives you a different it that's what Blender allows you to do. You see the Z film, you don't hear anything,
Right.
you don't
Right.
so that sense is not
Right.
present in your interpretation of the Z film, right?
Yeah.
So now that I'm adding, the noise of the Harley. Now, wait a minute. This changes the whole thing,
Have you
So
got your Roscoe White, backyard photograph superposition? That is so great. I'd love to share it on this occasion if it's at hand. Could you pull it
it's
up or?
it's on the blog. Let's
Right.
see.
Larry has done so much great work, Ryan, with superposition. And he found a photograph of Roscoe White at a beach and superimposed on the backyard photograph. And it turns out Roscoe was far more muscular and had a more developed chest. So that Lee is like a little shadow of the figure in the backyard photographs, where they used Roscoe as a body double and then pasted his face on four different versions, which he said is. He knew something about photography and eventually he'd be able to prove it.
He
Well,
was
he
an
was absent.
expert. He was an
He
expert.
did.
He used to, yeah. And something I just wanted to show you, because Richard Hook, he was my buddy, my good
I'm
friend,
so sorry about
and
Richard.
I know. But this picture that I found in one of his books, I had to copy it. He was right, and he did this, before. And this exactly follows in what I did with the overlays. Let me just get this going here. Oops, here we are. Okay, here. and here.
These overlays are so sensational.
Okay, this was Richard's work.
That
Okay,
was Richard's work.
that's right. And I said, hey, and this is exactly what we did later on, but in a more sophisticated operation,
Yeah.
But look what he did. He took them,
Yeah.
and it lined up perfectly,
Yeah.
So then, I'll show you here where we went ahead here with the Roscoe White overlays,
Good.
which were so important.
As a CIA or FBI was very sophisticated in manufacturing evidence to frame an innocent man. It's disgusting.
Okay, this goes back, Jim, and I know because you had some very, very interesting things to say about this when I was pulled from the mock trial back in 2017, remember?
Yes.
And I was going to introduce the overlays, not just
Yes.
the
Yes.
backyard photos, but also the man in the doorway,
Right.
And for some reason,
Yeah, if you had not sent your stuff in advance, naively believing they cared about the truth, you would have been able to present they couldn't have stopped you, but they knew it blew the whole case apart, Larry, so they couldn't let you do it. Go
And
ahead.
just on those two simple premises, the overlays of the backyard and more importantly the man in the doorway. But
Right.
the backyard photos, okay, and Roscoe White and the analysis taking Richard's work, one step further, okay. And we noticed, that his chin was completely flat, and all
Roscoe, yeah.
photos of Roscoe White,
Presley
he looked like a
had a more
chameleon.
pointed kid, yeah.
Like he could change his appearance, And here's one of the overlays, following Richard's work,
Yeah.
and as we go and the opacity, increase the opacity, we can see that everything lines up perfectly, the size of the head, the length of the neck, the chest, the
Yeah.
torso, the traps here and everything. And then when we do the same with Lee, we can see how scrawny he was in comparison.
I know that is so devastating.
And here's the proof, and these overlays don't lie, you know that. So but like I
I
said,
love it. I love it. I love it. Let's see, and we just have a few minutes left. Brian, your thoughts about all of the above?
no, there's all sorts of new techniques that have been developing that help us do this type of research. Everything from sun position analysis,
Oh, yeah.
geopositioning, artificial intelligence now. I mean, I'm using it to create transcripts of shows I want to critique or review, document time and dates within different shows that we can do. We also, in the past, used optical character recognition to figure out what was on documents. The problem was it came out in such a big jumble, but at least it did allow us to create a bit of an index. So I think there's a lot of hope here, but we're going to need some supercomputing if they do give us a dump of files related to JFK, having a centralized index and having it put together in a way where we can, drill into exactly who did what,
That would be too easy.
that's going
That
to
would
be
be too
very
easy,
difficult to
Brian.
do.
That would be too easy. They're not going to do that. That'd be way too
Yeah,
easy.
I know.
They're going to make it as tough as possible. That doesn't
Well,
matter.
and to be honest, they did that even with Sandy Hook. That was the very first thing they did was erase all the metadata, making everything irrelevant. There's no way to have chain of custody. Where did it come from? How was it produced? What printer was it on? All that stuff was gone. They had made a lot of mistakes related to Orlando and others where I was able to find that type of information when researching those cases. But I imagine that they're just going to release it like an image, like they're just going to take a photograph of the paper and send it out and then redact it. So it's going to be virtually impossible to figure this out. What can we do about it now today? I mean, it's 2024. So what would change in terms of how we, in terms of what happens to the Department of Justice, even if we were to break this thing?
We'd have to, we have, the thing is here, we have to take advantage and catch the mistakes, which they're not infallible. They cannot cross all the T's and dot all the I's, you know, like the passport thing, you know, it's just hiding in plain sight. You know, people like myself and some of my colleagues, you know, they really care about this thing, you know, and they're not going to go away until Lee Oswald is exonerated and justice is brought to JFK. That's all I can say.
Well, what is justice at this point in time?
Well, number one would be revision of history. That would have to be at the top of the list. You know, this is not what happened. It was a coup d'etat. Accept it, okay? And you know, let the cards, chips fall where they may. You know, what the hell? I mean, we're adults. You know, we can handle it. You know, right, Jim?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And
I mean,
justice for
what
Lee
reason?
Oswald. Lee Oswald had been smeared as one of the great assassins of our history. He was innocent. He was actually working for the government on multiple levels.
You
Whole
better
thing is
believe
a monster abuse and disgrace, and it needs to be set right. The record
But
needs to
what
be.
can there be in those files where most of the principles are gone? The methods and methods being used then are not even close to the ones that are being used today. You know, what ridiculous argument, you know? Oh, we're protecting
Yeah.
melting. Come on.
Revealed methods. Yeah, you're right. They're antiquated. Antiquated. They're going to be antiquated methods. What kind of a threat is that? Don't use any
Yeah,
argument.
the 8 millimeter tape and the and cutting film and splicing it isn't exactly the technique that's used anymore today. Photographs being put together in dark rooms, you know, that's old tech. This is a new
You know,
world right now.
I had the honor of being provided the Wilkerson and Whitehead 6K slides, and we did a presentation this past November for the anniversary for the 22nd, and they actually put me on the 22nd after we had come back from Dealey Plaza from the 12:30 thing that they do there, you know, and they stop the traffic, you know, and honor JFK and whatever. And I was the first speaker, and the what they did to the Z film I thought was bad, but after seeing and reviewing and working with the 6K slides, it's just totally pathetic. You know, the extent of airbrushing from 130 on Z frame 130 on is just astounding, and some of the high definition images that we were able to extract and work with.
Barry, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy day to join us. Brian, wonderful having you here. Sensational. Everyone, spend as much time as you can with your family, your friends, and people you love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left. And support Revolution Radio.